Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the Inside China Basin Baseball Podcast on thesportsvirus.com, featuring players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by Sun First Solar, known for delivering solar excellence since 1984 and recently voted best solar company in Marin County. We're also brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco, offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play. Coming up, we'll talk to Barry Bloom from Forbes.com and SportBusiness.com as part of our webcast podcast. But first, I want to tell you about our favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. TPC Harding Park is closed per the city and county shelter-in-place order until further notice. Stay tuned for new date information on the postponed PGA Championship at TPC Harding Park. Barry, long time no talk. Great to be talking some baseball, even though there's no baseball right now, although maybe there is some baseball imminent. Good to see you.
Hey, Joe, what's going on? How's everything? You all safe and healthy?
Yeah, everybody's healthy, trying to stay healthy. And, you know, that big news that just came down here in the last 24 hours with Jeff Passan reporting it for ESPN, that Major League Baseball is considering playing games in Arizona. At first, I thought, whoa, I mean, isn't it too soon for that? They start to detail what they're trying to do there, what they're thinking about doing anyway. And maybe it sounds like it could come to fruition, but it sounds a little scary too, Barry. What do you think?
Well, I think first and foremost, you know, you have to have the health and safety of everybody in the area locked down before you can even think about doing this. And I think you look at a place like Phoenix, where, you know, right now the testing hasn't been great, but so the case level hasn't been very high. It's about 2,400. I mean, I think deaths going into the day in the entire state were about 50, 30, maybe in Maricopa County. So I think when you get through the crest, which health officials here are saying is going to be towards the end of the month, early May, if it goes down to almost zero and you have instant testing and you can get people on the field and you also have the CDC loosening some restrictions here on gatherings of above 50, then you can probably start thinking about doing it. But on contrary, and I've been writing about this and suggesting playing in the spring training sites for a couple of weeks already. And, you know, with Florida, their wave is still coming. And I think it kind of knocks that out. But I think if you're going to have a baseball season, I think it's the only way you're going to do it is to have it here.
Yeah, I mean, it would be strange because, first of all, these players would not be able to see their families. What they're talking about for Major League Baseball is having Major League players basically go from the hotel to the ballpark and then back to the hotel. No families, you know, basically you're sequestered. It's like being on a trial, you know, you're a jury member, and you're going to do that for 4.5 months. That first of all, is something that would be hard to condition players to do, and I guess that's the safest way to do it. So I guess that's really the only way to do it, right?
You know, I'm not sure that it needs to be quite that stringent, but I think it just comes down to, you know, whether the players really want to be paid or not. I mean, really, you know, they're taken care of in this agreement that was just done between the Players Association and MLB. They're pretty much taken care of until June 1st. After June 1st, baseball's going to have some revenue coming in for them to be paid beyond for the rest of the season, which means at some point they're going to have to play. So they're going to have to weigh the money with their lifestyle. And, yeah, the whole, you know, seeing their families running around, going to bars, restaurants, you know, doing what these guys do, you know, that's going to have to be out the window. But it's really for only a very small period. 4.5 months is going to go by fast, especially if you're playing a condensed schedule in a very short period of time and you're trying to get 15 games in a day here, you know, in the state.
Well, you're talking about playing, you know, maybe I heard, triple headers at Chase Field, you know, trying to avoid the hot weather by playing most of the games there because it's a retractable roof. But when you're playing at Scottsdale Stadium, let's say, or, you know, at the Dodgers facility, or any of the other ones that are outside, I mean, you're going to have to play early morning games or late night games. I mean, yeah, the proximity is good because in Arizona, you can get from one stadium to the other, but the weather, and you live in Arizona, Barry, I would think that would be a real challenge in the summer.
Look, they played minor league baseball here for years. They played it at night. They played it during the day. They played it at Phoenix Muni. They played it at Scottsdale Stadium. The Firebirds were there before the Diamondbacks came in. They play Arizona, you know, summer leagues here with kids, you know, all day long. It's not optimal, but when you're looking, you've got, like, 10 facilities in the Phoenix area, then you add Phoenix Muni, then you add Chase, then you add, you know, High Corbett and Chemo down in Tucson. You know, you've got 14 facilities here that you can rotate teams in. And with triple headers and Chase under the roof, you know, you have places to play these games, and you can accommodate 30 teams. You know, right now, the hotels here are either closed or empty. So I'm sure it would be easy for them to make a deal with 30 hotels in proximity of each ballpark. And, you know, you have, obviously, the Great Food League. So you have each team is assigned, and in this case here, you have 10 facilities. You have 5 facilities that are shared by 2 teams. You know, you can add a team or two to the other facilities from Florida. And then you just get hotels around each facility, so guys don't have to do that much travel. I mean, it's not, as we say, it's not optimal, but it's not an optimal time. And for Major League Baseball to get its all its television revenue in, and at least not write off the entire season, and have this game, all the games on TV. It's about the only way you're going to do it because, look, with the amount of deaths that you've had in New York, I think it's a while before you're going to be able to play Yankee Stadium and Citi Field. I think it's a while before you're going to be able to play in Chicago. Even in the Bay Area, you know, you've got, when it was suggested by the president that NFL could start on a regular schedule in September, you know, Gavin Newsom said no. So if you're not going to play the NFL in September, how are you going to play baseball anywhere in California before then, too? None of it's optimal, but if you're going to have a baseball season, you're going to have to work out the details.
Inside China Basin continues after this from Sun First Solar. Jones goes back near the wall, shading the sun, and he dropped it. He lost the ball in the sun. Let's put the sun to good use at home. With a SunPower residential solar system, your SunPower elite dealer, SunFirst Solar, has a wide range of financing options, and they provide the finest customer service from start to finish, regardless of size or scope. SunFirst Solar offers the highest efficiency systems, newest technology, and the best warranty in the world. SunFirst Solar offers the most competitive price while not compromising on quality. This summer, let the sun heat your pool and eliminate your energy bill. Don't drop the ball. Call SunFirst Solar at 415-458-5870. That's 415-458-5870. And get your SunPower solar system today. Here's an issue that I see, Barry. Most of America right now, you're sitting at home, you're sheltering in place, so you're trying to figure out how to pay your bills, how to pay your rent, and yeah, this would be a nice diversion and entertaining, no doubt about it, if it's on television. But at the same time, why are they able to work and they're going out and playing ball and they're making money and we aren't? You know, I could see that kind of attitude from a lot of people, and they can't even go to the games because there are going to be no fans at the games. So, I mean, really, you would think about Major League Baseball, the whole point of it, it's for the fans, and now it becomes a TV sport instead of being at the ball game. I don't know that baseball is as much of a TV sport as the NFL. It would be fun to see, but at the same time, I mean, I don't know. There might be some animosity here with some of the fans thinking that, you know, is this the right time to do it?
Well, if, you know, I just think you're viewing it through a traditional paradigm, and this is not a traditional time to be looking at any of these things. You know, people are going to have animosities. They're going to look at it through their own prism, no matter what you do. And so you basically look at, you know, what's the common good? And as I wrote today in my column today, I think that you really could have fans at the games. If you were basically saying that this community is healthy enough to stage these games, then you could easily say we're going to sell a little bit below half the tickets in the ballpark, whatever the capacity would be. If it's a 10,000-seat ballpark, you sell less than 5,000 seats, maybe 4,000, and people sit, like, every third seat. You know, you still continue to do that. And, of course, all of this is tested. If you have these instant tests, which they're talking about, which gives you a result in 15 minutes, then everybody could be tested. I was talking to a former Major League owner about this yesterday. You know, essentially, you could be tested, given an armband with a date on it of when you're tested, you'd have color coded, and people would know that you're healthy, and so you would have the ability to walk around and intermingle with people. I mean, a lot of this is going to have to change. You know, we're not going to go back out there right now in anything we do. And not have, some sort of system for people to be comfortable to do it. You know, I thought about it already. I mean, I think I've taken my last ride ever on New York City subway system, Muni. You know, it's like, you just don't press it. So, yeah, I think it's a whole societal shift. We're not going back to where we were. Everything's going to be different. And you probably are going to be able to phase it in different parts of the country a little bit sooner than a lot of others.
I think if it's easy for everybody to get a test, also it's more reasonable. If you're talking about that these players are getting tested all the time so they can play baseball games, yet others around the country can't get tested, that's a bad look too. So I think, you know, that's sort of something that maybe has to be figured in is, you know, how are the tests being done around the country about the, you know, the number of tests, and can most people get them, not just Major League Baseball players, you know, going to play these games?
Well, yeah, and I think really ultimately, you know, to easily go to out to dinner or go to a store or go to groceries or, you know, go to a ball game or the theater, you're going to have some sort of availability of this test and some sort of way of identifying people who have taken the test and a way to authenticate the identity too, so that people aren't copycatting and creating similar looking wristbands or whatever you're using, you know, to fraudulently get in. So I mean, it's a complicated thing, and in a country like ours where, you know, personal freedom is such a big deal and any sort of, like, overall intrusion by the government, by a lot of people, is considered to be a bad thing, you're really going to have some government regimentation in all this so people can be comfortable and you can move the economy and everything along again.
We'll continue the conversation with Barry Bloom from Forbes.com and SportBusiness.com in just a second, but just wanted to tell you about Cain's Tire in San Rafael, one of our sponsors that remains open during this unfortunate time. They are practicing social distancing while being able to provide the community with tire and brake services that ensure necessary safety to driving on a daily basis. So if you need tires, or you need to have your car checked out for brake service, go to Cain's Tire in San Rafael. They're open regular hours, 415-453-2942. One of the things you mentioned, maybe being in the stands, you know, as a fan, and you're 6 feet apart from the next fan. And there's talk about maybe even the players being in the stands because they don't want them to be close together in a dugout. That could be kind of interesting if you're sitting in the stands and Buster Posey's sitting over there 6 feet away. Or, you know, that could be interesting. Also, the talk about having players mic'd for all of these games, you know, on the telecast, because that's something that I think we were headed towards. We saw that in spring training, and that's fun. You know, seven-inning doubleheaders, you know, maybe that's a good idea. No mound visits. That could speed up the game. One of them that I don't like, though, is the electronic strike zone possibility, which I know that's coming our way soon anyway, but I'm just not ready for it, Barry. And here it could be that we might want to do that because the umpire is so close to the catcher.
Right, right. The electronic strike zone's coming, and they've already used it here, and they were about to, I think March 17th was the day they were supposed to implement it completely in spring training, and they were going to use it and test it for the rest of spring training. You know, that didn't come to pass because we wound up having, you know, the games were banged on March 12th. So they've used it in the Arizona Fall League all year last year. It worked well. You know, it's going to come. Just get over it, Joe.
You're right. You know, one of the stories that you wrote recently, Barry, was about Team Builder, the app that teams have been using to stay in shape. How has that been working out? I mean, how are players doing as far as staying in shape to get ready for a season?
Well, I think it's a hit and miss thing. I mean, there's only 10 teams in Major League Baseball that are using that app right now. I'm sure every team has its process to be able to do it. But, you know, interestingly enough, two calls I made this week on articles I was working on, you know, I talked to Bochy on Monday, maybe it was last Friday, for an article I did on, you know, the disappointment of the Team France, which he was going to manage, being broken up the way it did when the WBC qualifier was canceled. And I asked him, you know, what he's been doing and in his role with the Giants. And he said that he knows that the coaches, managers, the baseball ops are having a conference call like every week to basically stay in touch and, you know, make sure that, you know, that they know what things are going on and prepare. But then I talked to Glenn Hoffman, who's, you know, coach for the Padres yesterday, and I asked him how much touch he's been with, you know, Jace Tingler, the new manager, AJ Preller, general manager. And he said zero.
Hmm.
So I think this is all on a per team basis. But I do know from what, you know, the research I've done about the Team Builder app is that these teams have been using this anyway. It's not, you know, something that they just started with because, you know, they have to keep track of players during the time of the coronavirus. So they have programs built in for the offseason for all their players to use wherever they are in the world, whether they're in the Dominican, Japan, Curacao, the U.S., and they can track what their players are doing, because every time the player goes into an app to use his video and interactive fitness program, as they go through the program, that's logged on a main sheet, and they go to their computer and they can get an overview about what everybody's doing. So I think that's the thing that's coming. I know Team Builder would like to get all 30 clubs, and I think it's probably a good advertisement for them that, you know, in this time that teams are using it, being able to keep track of what their players are doing.
And you wrote a story about Bruce Bochy getting ready with the WBC French team, and then that's been put on hold. By the way, how is Bruce Bochy? You know, because he was about to get adjusted to retirement as far as, you know, being a major league manager, but the season hasn't gotten underway, so it's kind of like the same thing for everybody else. How do you think he is adjusting to the fact that he's not managing in the major leagues, and do you think he'll come back?
Well, obviously, that's an ongoing question because, you know, he never seems to get it out of his system. And, you know, you ask him, I've asked him upteen times since he made the announcement that he was retiring from the Giants last year in spring training, whether this was it or he wanted to come back. And he's had ample opportunity to say, no, Barry, this is it. Don't ask me anymore. I'm not coming back. But he always equivocates. And again, when we talked about it, you know, I saw him during the World Baseball Classic qualifier workouts a couple of days before the game. I went down to Tucson to talk to him and Barry Larkin, who was managing Team Brazil. And, you know, he again equivocated and said, you know, he's just not sure. Basically, he has to see when the season starts how he's going to feel about not being out there doing it. And he said so far with spring training, he said it's been great. He's been able to look at the Giants from a different angle. It's not his responsibility on a day-to-day basis anymore. And it's probably good for him to be separated from it after, what, 25 years of managing the Giants and the Padres? Now, that's a long run every year, especially with his, you know, health and his heart condition and everything that he's had to go through.
Well, the Giants are going to miss him, no doubt. I mean, we hope that Gabe Kapler does a really good job, but it's hard to replace Bruce Bochy, and what a great manager. It's also hard to replace Madison Bumgarner. For a lot of Giants fans, I still think they're trying to get over that. And you talked to him during spring training. How do you think he's settling in as a Diamondback, even though, you know, he's sitting there waiting to be a Diamondback, really? But it's got to be, you know, a little bit different for him just going through the spring training with a different team for the first time in his career.
Well, you know, the heartache for Madison Bumgarner is that this now makes three out of the last 4 years that he's had a part of his season disrupted either because of injury or sick illness or something like this. You know, it's like he had the dirt bike accident, which damaged his shoulder, which knocked him out, you know, a good piece of a season. He had a line drive off of, or a bouncer right off of his hand in his last outing in spring training 2 years ago, and he missed the first, like, 6 weeks of the season because of it. You know, last year he finally got in a whole season, and this year, as he was working back, you know, it happened to him again. And I'll tell you a funny story. In his second outing against Cleveland, I mean, he was really, I was clocking his pitches, and he wasn't getting much up past the high 80s. He had let up a triple in the first inning, on an 88 mile an hour slider, and then third inning, first guy walks, second guy ground ball to third off the third baseman's glove, base hit, first and second, and now Francisco Lindor is coming to the plate, and this is at Salt River Fields, and I turned to a couple of friends, writers I'm sitting with in the press box, and I said, you know, I know Bumgarner. And this is the perfect spot. Lindor is going to hit the ball two-thirds of the way up the left field berm for a three-run homer. And two pitches later, that's exactly where he hit it.
Oh.
And it was like an 85-mile-an-hour pitch. And Bumgarner said, you know, he threw the pitch in the same spot. But I look at it, and I wrote that, you know, it's where Lincecum was when Lincecum's career started to detour. I mean, you cannot pitch in the major leagues with that kind of repertoire and without that kind of velocity on your fastball. At least needs to be cranked up into the low 90s. And he's not cranking it there anymore, not with any consistency. And so he's got to really pitch down in the zone, and his other pitches have to bite the corners for him to be effective. And I don't know that he's, you know, the Greg Maddux type of pitcher who has the ability to do that. I mean, he's let up 20 home runs in his very limited appearances for the Giants at Chase Field. And even with the humidor and a lot of other changes they've made at Chase, I think that it's a home run haven still, and opposing teams are going to get him if he's up in the zone. So it'll really be interesting to see what happens with him. He could be okay, but look, to me, he was always a decent regular season pitcher, but he came through when you really needed him in the postseason. There's no doubt for this era, he's the best starting pitcher in this era in the World Series with a .25 ERA, the wins, four wins, the save with the last five innings of that game, seven in Kansas City in 2014. I mean, nobody was better. You know, it was like Curt Schilling and Randy Johnson were before him. But really, as you go past the first decade of the 21st century, it was all Bumgarner. And I think not only that, the two wild card games that he pitched, complete games for the Giants that got them further into the playoffs, you know, one into the World Series to win, you know, those were unbelievably dominant games and money games. It's just a matter of whether did Diamondbacks have enough pitching around him and he has enough to get him back into the postseason again.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Giants got the best of Bumgarner, and it might be better for them that he's not back in San Francisco. Another player who you wonder if he's already had his best years behind him is Buster Posey. Did not have a great season last year, but he's hoping that, you know, he's healthier this time around. Remember last year he was coming off of the hip surgery. This time, you know, it's a full off season without having to rehab. And I know you talked to Buster. What kind of frame of mind was he in to go into the season?
Well, you know Buster. I mean, when he comes off his 15th concussion, you know, being hit in the top of the head, you know, with either a pitch or a foul tip, he tells you he feels great. So he's not going to tell you. But I thought it was pretty interesting that, you know, in Peoria early on in the spring, he was able to put a ball out to right center field, you know, very early in the game. And he only hit, what, 8 home runs last year, if that. And his power numbers have been really down over the course of time, even worse in the last couple of years because of the hip injury. But it looked like, you know, he had good pivot on the ball and good torque. And he's getting up to the age anyway where, you know, as a catcher with so many years under his belt that, you know, he's going to start losing it regardless of what the injury. And he's had two major injuries with the ankle and the hip. And, you know, the fact is that, you know, Farhan and, Gabe Kapler decided that he's not playing any first base. So, I mean, either he's going to either catch or not. And so if he stays healthy enough, you're basically looking at him to have maybe 120 to 130 games behind the plate. And then right now the Giants don't even really have a viable backup catcher. Although I'm sure the way Farhan does things, he'll be ripping through the waiver wire to pick people up as soon as he can.
We'll have more with Barry Bloom in just a moment. We all know that solar systems make financial sense and environmental sense. And when it comes to choosing the best installation crew in the business, Sun First Solar should be your first choice. Sun First Solar has provided solar excellence since 1984. They are SunPower Elite Commercial and Elite Residential installers with a reputation for technical excellence, innovative design, fair pricing, excellent customer service, and end-to-end quality and competence. Sun First Solar is a family business devoted to treating their employees, customers, the community, and the environment with respect, and they are devoted to renewable energy and sustainability throughout the Bay Area. There is no roof or project that is too complicated. Sun First has successfully installed solar on Spanish tile roofs, metal roofs, and very steep roofs. They also have extensive experience in solar ground mounts and solar pool heating. Competitive pricing, expert consultation, and the best warranty. Go local and get your Sun Power solar system from Sun First Solar today. Call Sun First Solar at 415-458-5870. That's 415-458-5870. I want to talk to you, Barry, about Barry Bonds, somebody who you've covered very closely in your career. And we all know about his Hall of Fame credentials as far as what he did on the field. Of course, there's a lot of controversy with him and Roger Clemens as to whether or not they will actually get into the Hall of Fame. I know you recently spoke to Barry Bonds about that and other topics. What do you think about his mindset as far as that goes? Do you think he feels he eventually will get in? And what are your thoughts about the writers as we go forward, because his percentage has gone up over the years?
Well, in my discussions with him, and I've talked to him about it a lot more off the record than I have on. We had a full discussion about it before the Hall of Fame vote this year. And I think he thinks, and I did too, that his best shot of getting it would be next year. Because next year, or later this year, when we get the ballots in December, there is absolutely no first-time Hall of Famers on the ballot who have any merit of getting in, not only on the first ballot, but probably ever. Plus, the holdovers from this year are, you know, the Omar Vizquels. You know, you have Roger and Barry, who are in the 60s. You have Schilling, who came pretty close. And I think he has 2 years left along with Barry and Roger. And I think he's got probably the best chance of being voted in next year with the ballot being so barren. But I think if the writers don't look at it and give Barry and Roger a thorough look next year and vote them in, I think Barry needed about 35 votes. He's probably not going to get in on the writers' ballot because 2021, you know, we're talking about for the class of 2021, the 2022 class has Ortiz and A-Rod on the ballot, and all this stuff is just going to hit the fan again with the discussion of steroids. You know, and you've got a guy who is an implied steroid user and a DH, and another guy who was suspended and is an admitted steroid user, but holds many of the all-time records and is one of the best hitters in history of Major League Baseball, regardless of what he was doing. So, yeah, I think Barry, publicly, he says that he doesn't think about it. He really doesn't care. It's up to the writers. It's none of his control. There's nothing he could do about it. Privately, he really cares. And I think he'll be hurt if he comes off the writer's ballot without getting in. And I think he has no shot at it on the Veterans Committee ballot. The Today's Game Committee is never going to vote him in.
Well, I think the writers have been in a tough spot, Barry. You know, your colleagues, they have to consider the criteria, the sportsmanship, which if you erase that, I think, you know, it's a no-brainer that Bonds and Clemens go in. I mean, you had other players like Piazza, Bagwell, Pudge, Rodriguez, they all went in, and there were questions about PED use there. And even the commissioner, Bud Selig, going in when he was presiding over that era. So to me, it's pretty simple. You get rid of that criteria, you know, in the Hall of Fame voting where you're saying, okay, it has to be, you know, good sportsmanship. Just forget about that, and then we can just move on, and then players can go in. Otherwise, it really becomes difficult.
It's a pretty obtuse, you know, clause in the balloting, and it's really the only direction that the Hall of Fame gives us on our voting. And you can really interpret that clause any way you can. I wish I had the exact wording in front of me, but writers go outside of that clause and interpret things all the time. I mean, the key to me of that clause is sportsmanship, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, for the teams on which the player played. But they've used that clause for, you know, McGuire going to a congressional hearing and not wanting to talk about the past. They've used it for the fact that, Sammy Sosa lost his ability to speak English. You know, in front of a congressional, they used it for Rafael Palmeiro waving his finger at a congressman saying he didn't take steroids. And they've used it for Bonds because they didn't like the way he interacted with them in the clubhouse when he did interviews. Although, as you know, with Barry, you were around it plenty. Barry gave many a good interview to almost everybody, too. And with the amount of times that he was under the microscope a couple of times a day before games and after games, he really did give more decent interviews than he did not. But, you know, he knows they've held his feet to the fire. he wishes he had handled things better and was a little bit different. But, you know, he was the way he was. And I'll tell you one thing about Barry. He's as honest a guy as I've ever met in the business. He was never anything but what he showed he was. And he never lied to you when he gave you an answer. If he didn't want to tell you, he wouldn't tell you. And even on the whole steroid issue, I don't think he ever fully denied to anybody in a public setting that he didn't use steroids. You know, he just danced around it. And his stance is, well, I admitted in my grand jury testimony that I did the cream in the clear. You know, what else do you want me to say? Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, you know, how far did it go? And do you want to do a major mea culpa about it? And is that going to mean anything anyway?
Well, what you mentioned about the press, we actually have a clip. This is back from June in 2016. Bonds was a hitting coach with the Miami Marlins at the time. And I hadn't heard him say this before, but he talked about dealing with the press and, you know, maybe some regrets that he had. Listen in. This, by the way, is from Marty Caswell, Marty Time TV on YouTube.
Man, I was an idiot with the press. And I stated that before. I was just a dumbass with the press. And I wasn't dumb with people. They made a story out of like it was people. But I was never mean to the people. I was just not a smart media person.
Bonds also talked about some advice he got from the great Hall of Famer Tony Gwynn about dealing with the media.
I believe we were at the All-Star game or something, and he sat there and he said, B, man, you got to, like, be a little bit nicer to them and stuff. And I said, I told him, okay, I was going to do it. But then at that time, I was so deep into controversy all the time. When I tried to give a little bit, it never got better. So by that time, I just said, to hell with it. I'm in it. I might as well just deal with it, you know. And it was sad because it wasn't something I ever wanted to deal with in my lifetime. But I was never really given that leash of rope of saying, oh, he's really trying, let's give him a little bit of credit. It was always bang, 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 bang on me, and I just took it to a whole new level of stupidity. You can talk about those stories, you can talk about the times, you can wish things were different, but I wouldn't change too much of it because it made me a great baseball player. I mean, that having that edge really focused me into playing baseball. But on the flip side of that, it didn't make it pleasant for me off the field. And so, you know, nowadays I tell the kids, you're never going to beat them, so you might as well just join them. It's like a marriage.
I guess it's, you know, it's easier now when you take a step back afterward. When you're in the middle of it, you have all those cameras on you, it's a lot different.
Well, I mean, I've got a great, you know, Barry Tony story just about that point, which Tony told me, it's in the manuscript of a book that I wrote with Tony, which is still hasn't been published, and I'm hoping may get out in the next year or so. But he went up to Barry and asked Barry, you know, why he acted the way he acted, and Barry explained it to Tony, and Tony said, look, Barry, we're going to the All-Star game next week. Just follow me, watch what I do, and do everything that I do. Uh-huh. So they go to the All-Star game. You know, Barry's watching Tony. He's doing interviews. Barry's doing interviews. He's having a good time. Tony's having a good time. They leave the All-Star game. Everything's fine. Tony tells him, now, when you get back with the Giants, just keep doing it, and you'll be fine. So what happens is that Barry starts the second half of the season after the All-Star break like 0 for 15. And the players on the team are coming over to him and saying, hey, Barry, what the hell are you doing? You're not hitting. You need to go back to being your old, irascible self. So he did, and he started hitting. So now the next time the Giants play the Padres, Tony asked Barry, hey, what happened? And Barry said, I'm sorry, Tony, I just can't do what you do.
And that was the end of that.
That was the end of that, yeah.
All right, before we finish up, you know, with all the shelter in place going on right now, a lot of people are sending out, you know, Facebook notes saying, oh, you know, name your top players or you know, some of the great players that you've met or interviewed. They were asking you that, Barry. And, man, some of the names on the list are very impressive. Besides Barry Bonds and Willie Mays, of course, because you're around San Francisco. But, you know, old-time players that you've been around, Joe DiMaggio, Ted Williams, Stan the Man Musial, Bob Gibson, Denny McClain, Whitey Ford, Sandy Koufax. Did I miss anybody? Wow.
Well, you missed the guy that, you know, that I didn't talk to, which is my all-time favorite, Mickey Mantle. I never met Mickey Mantle, and you know, he was one of my 10 on the list. But, yeah, you know, I saw all those guys play. That's number one. And then, you know, years later, they get into the Hall of Fame. You get to meet them there. Obviously, Bob Gibson, you know, not only did I see him play as a kid, but he was a coach on the Mets and the Braves. So I talked to him, interviewed him in that setting. You know, I met Denny Klein a couple of times, signing autographs out on the street in Cooperstown. He autographed a book for me and a rubber ball with all his records on it. You know, the Whitey Ford, also Hall of Fame. Yogi Berra, I think, was on the list. DiMaggio, I met. He was at Camden Yards in 1995 when Cal tied and broke Garrett's consecutive game record.
Oh.
So, yeah, sure, you figured that Joe D would be there, and he was in the dugout, and I went over and shook hands with him. I met Ted Williams in San Diego at the Hall of Champions because, you know, Ted Williams, you know, before he got sick, he was, you know, a San Diego kid from Hoover High. Met him around the batting cage. Tony introduced me to him. So, yeah, I've been really lucky.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Well, Barry, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it. We'll see if we have some baseball to talk about soon. That would be great. In the meantime, you know, we're going to follow what you write anyway because you're writing about the business of baseball, you know, Forbes.com and SportBusiness.com. So I would imagine that you're always busy. There's always something to talk about there, right?
Right, absolutely. Yeah, I can come up with a story anywhere.
That's right. Barry, thanks a lot. We really appreciate your time and doing this webcast podcast, our new venture here. And thanks for your patience. And we'll talk to you again really soon.
Sure. It was a lot of fun. Thanks, Jeff.
That's Barry Bloom, senior contributor for Forbes.com and a contributor to SportBusiness.com. Next week, we're going to go outside the box a little bit. We're going to talk to a couple of guys who are behind the scenes for network sports TV broadcasts on CBS and Fox. We're going to talk to Ethan Cooperson, who is from Stats Perform, and he's also the statistician for Jim Nantz on the NFL on CBS. And we're also going to talk to Ed Spieda, who is the statistician for Joe Buck on the Fox broadcast. And they also have opinions about baseball because they cover baseball as well. All that coming up next week on thesportsvirus.com on Inside China Basin. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening and watching on Facebook.com. We appreciate it.